Welcome back to a brand new episode of The Astroholic. I am producer Chris.
And I'm Alfredo, The Astroholic.
Today we have a couple of new fan questions, which is very exciting because people are writing in and sending us questions left, right and centre.
It's very exciting because then Chris doesn't have to think about the question.
It's good. It is good in that respect as well.
No, we are very grateful that you're curious about space and we can satisfy your curiosity.
Yeah, it's all good. But before we start, you may remember in the last episode, I very haphazardly ventured a guess as how people may have injured themselves or worse on board the International Space Station.
Yeah, you said that they might have tripped because you forgot about gravity.
I didn't forget about gravity. I thought there would be like some sort of fake gravity. I just didn't realize that was science fiction, not reality.
To be honest, and actually I forgot to mention this in the last episode, you can create gravity by making a spinning spacecraft.
Maybe that's a topic for a future discussion.
Maybe it's a topic for a future discussion. Okay. And that you could sort of trip, but I think it gets a little bit more complicated, so let's not dwell too much onto it.
Right, so I found out that some people have been injured.
Okay.
I tell a lie, some people have died in space.
Okay.
Three people, in fact, have died in space. Mm-hmm. I did my research on it. And apparently these were three cosmonauts who were on board the Soyuz 11 back in 1971. On their re-entry towards Earth, a valve burst and they were exposed to the vacuum of space. And from what I can tell, I believe they suffocated. When they opened up the craft, they were blue, but still warm, and were tried to be resuscitated. But they were dead. Very, very dead. So, people haven't died on board the ISS, but there are some nasty things that have happened. Anyway, on to much, much, much cheerier topics. Let's start the episode. The first question comes from Jedi Knitter on Instagram and Twitter, who asks, what is a globular cluster and how do we work out how old they are?
Very, very interesting question.
I have zero idea what a globular cluster is.
Never heard of it?
I could venture a guess.
Okay, you venture a guess.
I am going to venture the guess that a globular cluster is a nebula, a big gassy cloud in space. Just sounds, cluster makes it sound like there's lots of stuff going on, like maybe, if it's a cluster, then maybe it's like a small galaxy. But globular is a very...
You're closer to the truth with small galaxy.
Okay, small galaxy. But again, globular, maybe it's an uneven galaxy. Globular, like it's patchy, there's a lot of stuff going on in different bits. I don't know why. Globular for me is very overly descriptive and it makes it sound like there's just blobs of stuff happening. No?
No.
Okay.
So
then I have no idea.
No. We're going to get there. Anything that sounds a little bit like globular that you might have heard of?
Blobular?
Blobular. That's why you're thinking that it's some sort of patchy. It's not flubber.
Globular, slobular.
It doesn't have to rhyme. Look at the beginning of the sentence. Glob.
Global.
Global. Okay, globe.
Lots of globes, lots of spherical objects in this galaxy. Oh, a cluster of spheres in space. Globes.
We're getting really close. A cluster of spheres in space. Okay, good.
Solar systems?
No, but we're gonna get there. So what are...
Planets. Stars.
Stars!
Yay!
But...
So it's just a regular galaxy?
No.
Oh.
But good attempt. Very good attempt. You're getting a gold star.
I deserve cake for this.
So, globular cluster is a spherical collection of stars. So the globular refers to the shape of the cluster. Okay. And the orbit a galactic core as a satellite. So, they're just collections of stars that orbit a galaxy. And there are some interesting stuff. They're found in the halo of a galaxy.
What does that mean?
Okay, let's think of a traditional picture of a galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have the spiral.
Okay.
So the spiral, if you see it in 3D, and you see it from...
It should be quite flat, shouldn't it?
Exactly. So imagine that you have this... The flat part is where the spiral is, and that is the thin disk.
Mm-hmm.
Some galaxy, you can have a thicker disk, and around, you can imagine there is this spherical region, and that is the halo.
Okay.
So some stars in the galaxy can be there, and that's where we find the globular cluster. They think they form when some interaction with other galaxies, smaller galaxy, or sometimes even bigger galaxies, throws material around and end
up... Basically, is it just like the loose bits?
It is loose bits.
Okay.
And it's very interesting because they are good places to do some interesting astrophysics and studying things. And Jedi Nitter very interestingly point out the age of stars.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that is very important when it comes to globular clusters. So these globular clusters can have tens of thousands of stars. Some, I think the biggest, maybe are pushing a few millions. So they're still very small compared to even the smallest galaxy, but they're sort of in-betweens.
Okay.
But what is fascinating when it comes to aging, we think they either form in a single burst, so all the stars in the globular cluster at the same age, or maybe they form in a couple of bursts.
Okay.
So there is something that's called a bimodal population. And that is very good because allow us to test certain theories about how we expect stars to change with age, but also our models of what, how can we recognize that the age of these stars is correct.
Before we carry on, I want a quick aside. Can you very briefly explain how we tell the ages of stars in general? And is that the same as aging globular clusters?
So, actually, the globular cluster are our best bet to work out the age of stars.
Oh.
Because usually we cannot tell how old a single star is. So stars change throughout their lives, and often it's very difficult to pinpoint the specific characteristics that would age a star. And there are some stars that might appear much younger while they're actually much older. So, when you have a globular cluster, you just have this assumption that you were gonna have a good population of many different stars. So you're gonna have some stars that form quite small, so they evolve very slowly. You're gonna have some stars that instead they were very massive at the very beginning and evolve very quickly. And by sort of estimating how massive this global cluster is, you can work out how many of each group of stars you should have. And by working out, oh, this many has evolved, this may have not evolved, this they're looking like this, etc., you can have a good statistical approach on how old the entire cluster is.
Wow.
How can we work it out for other?
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a little bit more complicated. So we know you can recognize that some stars are, for example, you might have heard red giants or super giants.
Yeah.
And so you know that those are evolved, so they move beyond the main sequence. So star after they come into adulthood, they're in the main sequence. Mm-hmm. And the
retired celebrity era stars.
Yes. No, the main sequence is when they're getting all the roles, and then they move on something called the horizontal branch, in which they're getting redder and redder, and then something happens, so they can become red giants. Okay. Red super giants eventually, and some go and turn into supernova, some become white dwarfs. So there is quite a variety. You can sort of estimate stars' ages that. You can estimate star ages with if they are in a region that is still star forming. You can work out in a sort of the millions of years, in the tens, if not hundreds of millions of years. So there are ways to get ballpark figures, but with global clusters, we tend to have quite good estimates, simply because with the assumption that if we believe that that specific cluster form in a single go, then we expect the population to be in a certain way.
Yeah.
But even if you have a couple or a few star formation events, even with that, it's very easy to model. Then when you put in an entire galaxy with 100 billion stars and many things going at once, then it becomes a lot more complicated.
Well, that's really interesting. I hope Jedi Knitter has learnt something new today.
Well, I hope that answered the question. He has some pretty good background in astronomy, so...
Well, maybe he knew already and he was just testing your knowledge.
Well, I hope that that's not like...
it was a test.
It was a test. Did I pass the test?
Okay, we're going to move on to the next question now. The next question is from an anonymous source. I mean, I don't know who they are, but they wish to remain anonymous.
And they're a source. Are we about to get...
Okay.
Stay tuned. We are about to get some information.
No, not in that respect.
Okay. Did you misspoke by saying source?
No, I think a source also works in... This is from a source would prefer to remain anonymous.
All right.
Not as in a source of information, but rather a source, a location, a person, a place.
Okay. What does Deep Throat want?
Hate that name.
What? Codename Giraffe.
I've completely forgotten how we started this sentence.
The question from...
So. The anonymous person asks, Planet Nine, is it real?
Good question. And I was hoping that you would tell me who have good information about the existence of Planet Nine.
No.
So, what is Planet Nine?
They didn't tell me they did, at least.
Okay. What is Planet Nine?
Not Pluto.
Not Pluto. So Pluto is not classified as a planet, it's classified as a dwarf planet. If we want to argue about this, it's
we'll
going to be
for... We'll have a brand new series of spin-off episodes.
And we can have it in another episode.
Alfredo versus Pluto.
No, I don't mind that. I feel that the conversation needs to be more nuanced. But seriously, bother me with this for season two, okay?
I will jump in with what I think I know about Planet Nine.
Oh, yes. Let's do a little quiz on how much Chris knows about Planet Nine.
I may be mistaken. Planet Nine, or is it referred to as Planet X? I don't know if they're one and the same, because maybe Planet Nine is what... No, maybe Planet X is what Planet Nine was referred to when Pluto was still a planet, as in Planet Roman numeral X, Planet 10.
Yes.
So they, being scientists, believe that the evidence for Planet 9 being a thing is that our solar system is whacked out of shape, or just bent or something.
Okay, that sounds good.
Something, a big source of gravity has moved through the region and warped everything at some point in the past. And that it's only something that a planet could do, but where is the planet? Oh, maybe it's on the other side of the solar system. We can't see it yet, or it's really far out.
I wish this wasn't an audio medium, because you just miss Chris just being very pointy up and down while describing all of that. So, some good stuff there. Let's refine it a little bit. There are some weird things in our solar system. The first key evidence that would point to the presence of a yet-to-be-discovered planet, and it is yet to be discovered, is the fact that a lot of smaller objects beyond the orbit of Neptune, called Kuiper Belt objects, to which Pluto belongs to, they all seem to be pointing in the same direction. An orbit of planet, of an object around a star, is going to be elliptical. So Earth's orbit around the Sun is more or less like a circle, but you can have very eccentric orbits.
So in this respect, it would be
oval.
Oval? Okay, so it would come very close to us, to the Sun, but then go very far away, and then come back very close, but then carry on going very far away.
Yeah, in this oval shape. and the aphelio, the furthest point from the sun, of a lot of these objects all point more or less in the same direction, which is quite peculiar. And
is that suggesting that something has made them
yes.
do that? Okay.
And that suggestion is a large planet, I think it was between 10 and 20 times the mass of the Earth. So bigger than Earth, but smaller than Neptune.
Okay.
But orbiting between 200 and 700 times the Earth-Sun distance. Pluto is around 30 wow. Sun-Earth distance. So
it's really far out if it's there.
Really, really, really far out.
Would that, if it's ever discovered, basically make our solar system hundreds of times bigger than we thought it was?
No, it's... You see...
It wouldn't stretch the boundary of where...
No, we know that there are objects gravitationally bound to the sun, like comets, that have enormous orbits.
Okay.
There is the Oort cloud, so it is this region of material, very, very dispersed, but they probably stretch maybe up to a light year away.
Okay. It wouldn't make our solar system bigger than we thought it would, basically.
No, but it would really give some interesting thing to think about. Like, for example, could this object be moving at some point through the beyond the heliosphere? So the Voyager probes both left the solar system. They're moving at a speed...
They're moving very fast.
They're moving at a speed that is high enough for them to not be gravitationally trapped by the sun. And they are now in a region of space in which the solar wind and the particle produced by the sun is more than balanced out from the particles coming from the rest of the galaxy. And also depends on the shape of the orbit. Could this planet sort of be far enough away to move through? And I actually, we might be able to work that out already. I actually don't know the answer. It just popped into my head and I'm actually gonna look it up later if we can work it out or if we know that if it's beyond or not. But it's fascinating and it would also expand our definition of what our solar system is. We had in the previous episode the question from Laurie about solar systems, if they look like ours. And one thing that other systems have that we don't is super Earths and some Neptune planet. We don't have anything that is quite in between. Mm-hmm. We have terrestrial, and then we have gas giants, ice giants. And so it would be nice to have one of them not really around the corner.
Brand new buddy planet.
Brand new buddy planet. So it would be, I think, very, very interesting. And the only, but we don't have any direct observation or direct evidence. There is a lot of circumstantial evidence. And obviously the team that proposed this claimed that the evidence is now making the case against it very, very unlikely. With something I'm... tend to agree with some stuff, they make a very good case, but as always, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Cool. I'm going to throw one more quick question at you.
Hit me.
Is it likely to be filled with aliens who are hell-bent on reaping all of the gold from our planet to fix their own atmosphere? Is this Nibiru?
Oh, okay, so pretty much it's no.
Just no? No on its own?
Yeah, just know on its own. The only thing I would say about Planet 9 is if it exists and we discover it, it should be obviously called with starting with the letter P, because so all the kids can re-remember the rhymes.
The old acronym.
Yeah?
My very efficient memory just stores up 9 planets.
Yeah, I said rhyme, I meant acronym. Yes, that's very good. And with that, you need P, and we can...
There's only one.
Yeah, it's Persephone.
It's got to be Persephone.
And I would say, I know that is the Greek name and not the Latin name, like for all the other planets, but literally, screw it, Persephone is the name for it, and it's perfect. We expect it to be quite eccentric orbit, so it comes for half a time quite close to the sun, like Persephone coming out of the underworld. Seriously, make it happen.
It's
Planet
9, name.
Be out there, and we're going to call you Persephone.
It's the perfect name.
Perfect name.
Awesome. Thank you very much for answering the questions today, and we will be back next time with some brand new ones.
See you then.
Do you have any burning questions for the Astroholic? If so, send them in to me, at Illucifer, on Twitter, and I will spring it on him in an upcoming episode. See you next time!